When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. Enter ServiceNow. It puts AI to work for people, for employees, for developers, and even your customers, removing frustration and supercharging productivity. On our intelligent platform, AI isn't just a promise. It's happening today. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. To learn more, visit servicenow.com/AI for people.
Hello and welcome to Goblet of Wine, a drunken Harry Potter podcast. I'm Charlie.
And I'm Hannah. And we're two 20-somethings rereading our favourite childhood book, but this time with added alcohol and cynicism.
In today's episode, we're talking about the film!
Woohoo!
Of Half-Blood Prince.
So, grab glasses of mysterious liquids from around the world and join us on this drunken, reminiscent journey.
Hi. It's been a while.
Don't. They hate that. They hate that bit. As a bit, I think that's one of their least favourite bits.
Oh, no, wait. The bit we need to do is guess who's back.
Back again.
And guess who lives in fucking London again?
It's Charlie. Yay.
Hi.
So we've been gone a while and it's Hannah's fault because she's been on 1,000 million holidays. She's not fucking done yet.
It's not my fault. It's your fault.
Both of our faults. I have done nothing wrong in my life ever, actually. Honestly, yeah. So I went on holiday, then I moved, then Hannah went on holiday, then Hannah went on another holiday, and then what are you doing next week?
I'm going on holiday. I deserve a lot of holidays because I am special.
Yeah, she's actually going to the same place that my parents are going on holiday at the same...
The fucking moth.
We summoned the moths. About moths. Yeah, she's going to the same place at the same time as my parents, and this allegedly is not them going on holiday without me.
I booked it first. Your parents are stalking me to different countries.
Well, my mum apparently wants to meet your dad, something that she felt the need to tell me in a private
text. So we broadcast it to thousands of people.
Yes.
Last week I continued our original joke of visiting, I don't want to use the word strange, less visited countries because of in-jokes.
Yes.
And I went next door to Albania and visited North Macedonia.
Yes.
Absolutely brilliant. Just as beautiful as Albania. Would highly, highly, highly recommend.
Yep. I went back to Albania.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went for, I think, 3 days on a family holiday to Albania. So I've now been to Albania twice.
Yep.
Only one time as a bit, although I'm pretty sure this time was only because my dad, who's very well travelled because of work, disliked that I'd been to a country that he hadn't been to.
Oh, is your dad going to get annoyed that I've been to North Macedonia now?
Oh, yeah. He's probably already, like, looking up flights.
He should go. We should all go.
We should
visit
all
North
go.
Macedonia. We've actually become tourist boards for less visited Balkan countries.
Yes.
That's our new niche.
Yes. How are you, aside from your 1 million holidays?
I'm great, apart from my 1 million holidays. Yeah. Well, because of...
I love that you can be, like, in the middle of 1 million holidays and you're like, I'm great. Like,
I am great. I'm not lying.
There's something in your eyes that's like, help.
Help.
Help. Help.
Help me.
Help me. Help.
No, I'm great. I'm really happy.
You don't blink when you say that.
I'm really happy.
Oh, stop it.
How are you?
I'm fucking great.
There we go.
But, like, I don't know, potentially the first time during the entire history of the podcast.
Oh, God.
I'm like fucking brilliant. Like, I've moved back to London. My flat is lovely. I mean, aside from the fact it was fucking disgusting when I moved in, it was so dirty. But yeah, my flat's gorgeous. I had a housewarming last night, just a little dinner party, but it was really, really lovely. Yeah, good times, good vibes.
Good times, good vibes.
Good times, good vibe. Yeah, yeah, muchly. I feel like, sorry, another get your bingo cards ready.
Oh, God.
I feel like I've forgotten how to podcast. Oh, sorry, I just touched your leg.
I actually don't like that. My leg's bare. Get off. But only one leg is bare. That's the hell that kids...
I'll touch the other leg. This is less awkward if I do this. Yeah, I've forgotten how to podcast.
Great.
When did we last record?
2 months ago.
Yeah, for Barbie Oppie.
Was it Barbie Oppie weekend?
Yeah, Barbie
Oppie. Wow.
I think so, anyway. It must have been.
2 months ago. We've taken a bit of an unintentional break, but you couldn't have had it any other way.
It was both intentional and unintentional. Thing is, we normally take a break at the end of the season, so what we really did was take the break two.
Yeah, we just probably won't. We'll probably only miss one episode in between seasons rather than two or three. So
yeah.
Do you remember we didn't used to do that though? We literally only started that break thing like a year, 2 years ago.
Yeah, but I mean, you know.
Great, let's do the film. When did you watch this film?
This morning. Weird, hilariously, my trans ex stayed over last night for dirty minds, platonic reasons. And so I was like, Amy, I'm so sorry. I have to watch a Harry Potter film right now.
I just have to. As soon as a trans person stays over my house, I must put Harry Potter films on. Just to make people supremely uncomfortable.
I feel like I'm hate criming you right now.
You are a hate crimer.
Yeah. Speaking of my trans ex, Amy, she is actually having a... I'm not sure if it's GoFundMe or one of the other ones.
Crowdfunding.
I don't know what platform it's on. I can't remember, but the link will be down below. She's saving up for facial feminization surgery. She's someone like deeply, massively important to me. She's my ex, but we're like incredibly close friends now. So if anyone
they had a great argument last night about whose fault the breakdown of the relationship was. The rest of us loved that part of the dinner party.
It's not an actual argument.
I know,
though.
That's what was funny about
it's just like
this is like a bit, but we were all like
it's one of those things where it's like we know that we're just winding each other up,
yep.
But then everyone else takes it really seriously and we're just like, no, lol. This is literally a bit. No, she's someone very dear and close to me, and I know that this is something that would help her mentally so much. So if anyone has at all any money, no matter how small, that they can spare and want to put it towards a very good cause, then yeah, hope you help your local trans girl, and yeah, the link will be down below. Thank you in advance.
You watched it this morning.
Yes.
I watched it in 4 separate chunks over the last 3 weeks because I couldn't find 2 hours to spare.
Yeah. See, I wasn't massively hungover. I mostly was on like 4 or 5 hours sleep. And then just a bit hungry and dehydrated. I started watching it and I was like fully engrossed. I was like, actually, this is like the perfect like hungover.
Sure.
Like, and I've not been watching the films lately at all. Like, probably in the past year, I've maybe watched the first two and that's it, I feel like. And yeah, and I was like, this is hitting the spot. I was lying on the sofa. I was like, this is doing bits. And then my attention started slipping more and more. I was like, this film is long. And then Amy woke up and then I was like, well, this is uncomfortable. So my notes just get like less and less. Unless,
it was a bit weird. This was I realised, no, we must have done one in lockdown. I feel like this is the first one we watched separately.
Maybe,
we normally make a bit of a thing of sitting down together to watch it. And what's weird is, as I was watching it, I realised, so I, since we begun this podcast, made a pact to not watch any of them until we get to that one. So I've only rewatched 1 to 5 because we've got past the 5th book. So because we've been running this podcast 5 years, I haven't seen the 6th film in 5 years.
Wow.
And then decided I didn't have time to watch it in full and watched it in 4 chunks, one of them on my phone on an aeroplane. So it's just how the director intended me to watch it.
Yeah. It's the Snyder Cut. The EasyJet Cut.
Oh, were you there for the conversation yesterday, by the way, speaking of watching films hungover, for the Sucker Punch conversation?
No.
Have you seen Sucker Punch?
Technically, but I really hated it. It was one of those films where I hated it so much I could not pay attention to it.
Okay, because the morning we were all hungover in North Macedonia, stick the telly on in the background. We're all just trying to figure out life and get ready. And it's Sucker Punch. Mm. I have never seen this film before. I genuinely thought I must have taken some sort of wild drug the night before and was still tripping, like, watching it. I was like, why am I watching, like, a 20-minute My Chemical Romance music video? Yeah. Like, what the fuck is... And then it, like, switch it, and the colour grading and the makeup and the music... Like, I genuinely thought I had taken something and was tripping.
I cannot tell you what that film was about, and I've seen it. I just... It was so awful. I was like, I can't. And I know people love it, and it's a cult classic, and they normally love that kind of bullshit. No, could not stand it.
Maybe I need to try it not in a hungover mood. But yeah. Jesus wept. I was confused. Let's talk about another film. So you're back to the absolute batshit categories we decided on 5 years ago and have refused to change in all these years.
I was making these notes like, these categories do not work. We set them when we were learning how to podcast, and they really are
It's part of the bit. It's part of the bit. We must do these stupid...
It doesn't work!
Oh no, wait, we have drinks first and patrons first.
Oh god, yeah, that... See, we've forgotten how to podcast.
So, the drink is an interesting one. Let's start with that. The next two episodes are all full of things that have been kindly hand-gifted to us in some way. So some of these were handed to us in person.
Most of them
picnic.
Were via Nikita.
Some of them were via Nikita, illegally going in between countries. Full disclosure, we, in a space of a month, were handed personally so many things that I... And some of them had, like, handwritten notes attached to them that then got, like, mixed up. That I spent 2 hours trying to assign notes to every single different alcohol, I might have got slightly confused with some of them. If you're one of the people and you're like, oh, that's not quite right, please just message me and I'll apologise. All the alcohols are here. I just ended up getting... Because I was trying to track down, like, some people handed it to us in person and said, I'll email you about it, and then emailed a week later, and I'm like, I got no idea now. So
yeah.
I've really tried my best to track and pin everything down. So this came from Lara, who came to our summer picnic.
This Lara... was so funny.
This is so funny. So Lara gave us Fernet... Branca. Fernet yes. Branca. By the way, you can see how I've tried to do it. These are notes I've handwritten myself and gaffer taped onto things.
And she fucking sold the shit out.
She was like, oh, it's Argentinian. It's amazing. So it's an Italian aperitif that became popular in Argentina. Argentina. Why am I saying Argentina? Argentina. What's wrong with me? She wrote out instructions. You put it in a cup with half a cup of
ice. She really hyped it.
20% Fernet, 80% Coke. She says it's delicious. It's like the most popular drink. Everyone loves
it. We were so excited.
We were so excited. And then we brought it home. And Neil looked at the bottle and kind of squinted his eyes. And then went, and went into his notes app. And I was like, what are you doing? And he found in his notes app a note that said, Digestivo, do not order Fernet Blanco.
Which dates back to a few months before this, when we'd been out and ended up in some, was it like a Portuguese bar or something? I don't even know. And Neil decided to order this.
Aperitifs.
And there was 5 of us and we drank it.
And we hated it.
So much. It was... It was so bad.
All 5 of us. Normally there's one of us that's like, oh, it's actually okay.
And like, there's rogue alcoholic weirdos in the group. There's normally at least one of us will be like, actually.
Yeah.
No. All of us were like, to the point that Neil made that note on his phone as like a reminder to never order it again because it was that bad. And yeah, we went from being so excited to Neil being like, it's that. And we're like,
No. But we tried it neat.
Yes.
So, what's worrying me is the yellow foam on top. Have you noticed the yellow foam?
Yeah. So, yeah, this is mixed with Coke, right?
And we've got 2 alcohols this episode and 2 alcohols the next episode from different people. This is mixed with Coke.
Oh, that's so bad. Ugh.
It's nowhere near as bad as having it neat, but what it tastes like is you've put toothpaste in my Coke.
And grass.
Yeah, toothpaste and a bit of grass in my Coke.
Why do you... I'm sorry, Europe. Why are all European drinks grassy?
Argentina. Well, is that from
Europe? Is that... No? Oh, shit. Yeah, of course it is.
It speaks Spanish, but it's South America.
Opposite a world map.
Geography. But, no, to be fair, it's from... It's Italy. Since the year 1845, the secret formula, stop keeping it secret, of Fernet Branca has been based on an infusion from a unique blend of selected blossoms and
rare
aromatic herbs.
My point stands, all European
alcohols
taste like grass.
And yet, stop. What are these rare herbs? Get rid of them. Stop it. Yeah. I don't need these rare herbs.
I think the rare herbs are grass. I think they're like, basically, they mow their fucking lawns and then they're like, you know what? Well, I put this to waste. They make fucking liquor out of it and they need to stop.
So thank you, Lara, for this drink that we dislike. Let's do some patrons.
Thank you.
So we've got a lot of new patrons that have come in since we last recorded. So A, Tess of the D'Urberville, size thank you to Tess.
A, Chocolate, size thank you to Chloe. Hannah texted me the other day and she was like, I want you to voice note how you think this name is pronounced. And I am so fucking proud that I got it right.
So I only did this and so this person has also sent in a howler for the next episode, which we're recording right after this. And I saw it come in and I was like, M-E-A-B-H. I have never seen that written down before. And I was just like, don't know. Clicked on the howler to hear them say their name at the beginning and then was like, ah, okay, that does make sense if I'd sat and thought about it, but I never would have got it. So maybe you say it. It's Maeve. It's Maeve. It's an Irish spelling of Maeve.
That's the thing. Having an Irish ex, I think that I'd seen enough Irish names because we used to talk about names a lot.
Why has it got a B? What's the B doing in there? It's not a V. You can't say Maeve. It's got a B.
But I was so proud. There's no way you expected me to do it.
No, I thought you were going to be like, well, you did say first, is it? Maybe.
The thing is, because that was my like first reaction, and then like I literally got halfway through and then I was like, it's Maeve.
It's Maeve. So a maybe size thank you to Maeve.
A killer whale size thank you to Callia.
A tiller whale size thank you to Talia.
A what?
I don't know, I mean, I have to rhyme with yours.
Why? We're not that whale. Drunk. Why is this so chaotic?
A tiller whale is those killer whales that have been attacking the boats. That's a bit old news, but then...
We're so good at current cultural references.
So we can listen to this in 5 years and be like, oh, also, this is just a shout out to Toby and Kimmy if you ever get this far. I have a personal friend who them and their boyfriend have just started listening to this, but they're on season one and they keep being like, so this thing you said, and I'm like, A, you know me personally, please stop. B, I don't remember it was 5 years ago. And they're like, do you know how often you two talk about how much you love Ezra Miller? And I'm like, I know! We purposely don't go out and remove things because we don't believe in it. Please don't bring it up to me.
I mean, me and Neil literally as in moments ago we're having this discussion because we're going to the IMAX at Waterloo tomorrow. And the last time we were there was for the Fantastic Beasts screening. And at the time we were all like so in love with Ezra, so excited to see them. And most importantly, we're like, well, thank God they didn't bring out Johnny Depp. And now it's like, oh.
But yeah, apparently we both talk about how wet we get for Ezra Miller. So that was in season one. Anyway, so thanks to Camille and Toby for listening.
Yes. I'm so excited to no doubt one day meet Toby at a party and just be like, oh, hi. And him being like,
it's the other one.
It's the voice.
It's the voice.
A toe size thank you to Trisha.
A leopard size thank you to Link Leo.
A super califragilistic expialidocious size thank you to Sasha.
A Mika size thank you to Mika.
I hope this is the Mika.
I hope it's... Do you know how much I love the Mika? I saw Mika live this summer for the first time and I would... This is how I imagine a religious experience feels, seeing Mika.
An Eleanor Rigby size thank you to Eleanor.
A Becky with the good hair size thank you to Becky.
And a low-key size thank you to Laurie, who has upgraded their pledge.
Thank you all so much for joining. We haven't done bonus episodes in a while, let's be honest, but there is such a big backlog of content on our Patreon, which you can access. There's, I think, 50 episodes of backlogged content on there, from vlogs, which are some of our favourite, to talking along through the films, to reading My Immortal, and you also get access to our Discord, which is a wonderful, friendly, supportive and terrifying place.
That's getting less bad.
What's getting less
bad? The drink.
Yeah, I know. Now, let's get on to Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. Okay!
So, My main thing when watching this...
You've got one note.
My one note was that it's so funny how they put so much work. You can tell that their main thing was opening this film. We need to put forward shit has gotten real. All this shit's happening. The Death Eaters are like...
Sorry, is this a plot note? Should we just remind people of our categories?
Well, this is an overarching film. It's an overarching film. No,
sorry, I'm so sorry.
The Death Eaters are, you know, attacking bridges, kidnapping Ollivander. They're wreaking havoc, and it's all like big, dramatic music. Yeah. Evil shit is happening. It's like... really trying to be, ooh, big, scary Voldemort's here, blah, 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 blah. And then it just turns into a rom-com.
With a really dark ending.
Like, they really went, yeah, the first 10 minutes, that's the drama.
The tone of this film is batshit crazy.
It's like bookended by, like, dark drama, and then the middle is all just unnecessary rom-com. And they're like, why put the plot... when we can, awkward scenes between Harry and Ginny and adding burning the burrow, which adds
We'll get there.
But yeah, weird that they just really went all in on this opening to then be like, and now the entire film is going to be about romances, even though we're giving you none of the information you need for the next film.
It's by far the most tonally bizarre film of the eight, like by far and away.
It's so bad.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
There are elements of the film which are fantastic, but it lands overall. What's that? Oh, that. That's it. That's what makes it. Yeah, that.
That's the good part of the film.
That's the good part of the film. There are elements of the film which are fantastic, but it lands overall just so fucking weird. Mm-hmm. So the notes we will be covering in our Fantastic Four. We're not changing it. You can't make us change it. We know we run this podcast and we can change it. We're not doing it.
We refuse to admit our mistakes. So it's staying.
So number one, we will cover the plot of the film. What's the plot of the film, you ask? It's the plot of the film.
Have we just spent, 2 years covering the plot of this story?
No, sorry, but it's not going through the plot of the film. That would be stupid. No.
It's just miscellaneous.
It's miscellaneous. But we do it
into one of the other categories.
But we do it first.
Yep.
Number two, casting. This one makes some sense. Does it make sense to go second? No.
No.
But this is where it's going.
It also made a lot of sense when we started this. And now there's one new character of film and it's like, okay.
Number three, the word which doesn't mean what we think it means. Cinematography.
Essentially, anything film make.
Anything that makes the film a film, like behind the camera. And the last one, adaptation. Or adaption, whether you're American or English.
Definitely different to plot.
It's very different to plot. Let's go. Let's start off strong with...
Let's go!
Why
Energize.
Does Harry Potter become a player?
Harry gaslights her about the fucking newspaper. He's like...
Why?
You're insane! You're seeing things!
You're not seeing a paper with my face on the front!
Statue of Secrecy! What? I'm just gonna read this animated... Like, surely there should be, like, a spell or, like, a... I don't know, to make the newspapers... pause moving for when you're in public.
Also,
what if you left one somewhere? Even if you had paused the image, what if you left one of the newspapers, just forgot it on the fucking tube, and a muggle was like, yo, what's this?
Oh, magic exists. Or it should have, like, yeah, if it's in front of muggle eyes, it pauses. There's stuff that can
or
do
like,
that.
Yeah, or they see something else, you know?
But also, why is 16-year-old canonically awkward Harry trying to pull an absolutely
but
fucking
was he?
Gorgeous... Yes.
No, was he? Because all he starts to ask her something. We don't know what it was. And she's like, that's blah, blah, blah.
I get off at six.
He might not have been asking her out. He might have been asking for directions or anything. She's just like, yeah, this is when... Also, I'm sorry, Harry... Harry, you're taking on her on a date with what money?
You have no money.
You have no muggle
and
money.
Also, you have no game. And also, this girl is so hot, she would not go for you.
No!
Like, she's about 4 foot taller than you.
I know I'm not one to talk in terms of taste of men, but what was she seeing?
He's 16!
and it's randomly roaming a cafe
in a station.
Do you know which station this is?
Oh, I read it once, I've forgotten.
It's Surbiton.
It's Surbiton.
So it's near Kingston.
Lovely.
And one time when I was in university, I got on the wrong train and I had to get off, like, once I realised that was the first one that I came to, and got off there, and I was like, why is this station familiar?
That's funny.
And then it was like weeks later, I was like, oh! But yeah, so it's like, it's our ends. And I like it because even though it's like completely fucking unnecessary that they filmed it in Surrey, like no one's
good
actually going to know. Like,
it genuinely is that. So
I'm sure that they just picked it based on aesthetic, but I quite like that it's like, okay, so the Dursleys must live like kind of near like Kingston, Surbiton area.
Yeah, which is weird because before I'd kind of always assumed they lived much more like non-Londony Surrey.
Mm.
Nice one, idiot.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know because... But I suppose Harry's Roman. He's Roman.
And like we kind of... Well, we don't know if Vernon commutes into the city or...
That's a good point, actually.
Because the thing is, he says that he's been riding around on trains. So in my head, I feel like they might live like... near Guildford would make sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. The one redeeming quality of this weird scene is the bit where the poster is for the magic perfume, which is a genuine perfume that exists, and then the train goes past and Dumbledore appears in front of it is absolutely the kind of thing which you couldn't describe in a book and is perfect for a film, and I fucking love it. It makes me just do a little giggle every time.
Yeah. I do also love the line Harry just being like, I like riding around on trains. One, because mood. Two, because have you seen that cartoon where it's like, I like trains, and they just get hit by the train?
No.
Have you not seen this?
No. Where's your next note? Mine's at the Burrow.
My next one was saying that I bet that Dumbledore and Molly swap knitting patterns.
Mine was, so they get to the Burrow, there's some bits I'll mention in the other categories because we unnecessarily split this, not by order of the film, by stupid categories. I love how much this must piss people off.
Pisses me off.
It pisses me off.
But I won't admit I was
every
wrong.
Every year, we have to look up how to do it.
I couldn't be bothered to go back to the episode, so I ended up scrolling through my hundreds of notes to find it.
Can you imagine if we just change it for film 8? Anyway, my next note is they get to the Burrow, la la la. And then there's this scene, which you pointed out in film 5, and they do it again in this film, where they just get the three of them to laugh at absolutely nothing so they can use it in flashbacks. And this one is just like, how old's Dumbledore? I don't know, like 200?
No. 150, which is only about 30 years older than he actually is supposed to be.
I thought he is meant to be 150.
So, okay, because I googled it. At one point, JK said he's 150, and then at another time she said the year he was born. And it's like...
Yeah, but she's shit at years.
Yeah, so I think he's actually, like, according to year he was born, is actually, like, 120 or something like that. So it's, like, close enough that it's, like... This is not... And also, what really annoys me, it's like Emma Watson's like, just... She cannot fake laugh. She just kind of... She just does this like breathy like... And it's like the worst. Like, and they just... Over nothing. And I think it happens quite a few times in this film. I feel like I was just getting really annoyed where it's like, unfunny line.
And the thing is, when they use those clips in montages and flashbacks, it looks great. It does look like, oh... But just take that as B-roll. Stop forcing it into the script.
Yes,
it's so bad. Or get a better script. Like, there were points in this where I was like, I know that some of the young, I'm talking about Jenny, can't act. Like, but also get a better script if they're struggling. Like, try harder.
Yeah. Okay. Bonnie,
we'll talk about it in casting.
No, because, no.
You want to talk about it now?
Yes.
Okay.
I do. I just.
She's so. She's very good at other things.
It's not only is she not good at acting, but it's not even like she's being made to act opposite someone she doesn't find attractive. It's as if she's being made to act against someone that she is like physically repulsed by. Like, can't look at him, can't nothing. That he's that, like, just even the thought of Daniel Radcliffe just makes her want to peel off her skin. That is how she is acting. There's a bit when she like runs towards him, but she's just like stiff, just kind of, and it's supposed to be her being like, oh, like it's Harry, like a good, she just kind of awkward. Like, it's like she's repulsed by him, which there's no reason to be, but it's just so bizarre. It's not even like she just doesn't fancy him. It's like she's disgusted.
And also, she's delivery of every line is so monotone and flat. It's unbelievable. It's like, I've never heard such a lack of tone in something someone says. It's just like, come here, you. Open up. I'm like, where's the intonation?
It's
anything. Come on. And this was clearly like, this wasn't one take.
Yeah.
You probably did this multiple times, and this is the best one.
Like, they would have been making her, and like, just, could she really not then be like, can you just, you know, any expression in your voice? No, it's just, and oh,
it's distractingly
bad.
It's like, and like, this is absolutely nothing against Bonnie Wright as a person. She now like produces and directs and is a brilliant environmentalist and has written great books
and
on
she
how
was
to be
cast
more environmental.
From so young
and she was cast from so young, but Jesus Christ.
They do another like awkward breathy giggle, like, you've got a bit of toothpaste, why is that funny? It's not funny. And they just go
so we can have the bit later where they add in that the thing she can smell in the potion is toothpaste rather than leaving it.
But
because
it's not
the audience
funny.
Is too dumb to work out that if she just doesn't say the third thing that she fancies wrong, the audience is too dumb to work that out. And I'll tell you why the audience is too dumb to work that out. Because this film batters you over the head with Harry and Hermione.
Yes.
It is egregious. It is disgustingly egregious.
The thing is, like, I don't even mind that you've got a bit of toothpaste, but it's not funny. Why do they do the after? Why?
I have a train-based rant.
Go on.
So they show the Hogwarts Express going through the Scottish countryside. Mm-hmm. I counted the number of carriages. That number of carriages could not even fit 200 pupils.
Show your workings.
I don't need to. It just wouldn't. There are not enough carriages on this train to even carry like 200 pupils, let alone the 1,000 that are meant to be at Hogwarts. And it's just, get some more carriages. It's just stupid. It just pisses me off.
Yep.
I will say, where the other laughter was forced, I don't remember what this line is relating to, but there's... Oh, no, I do. It's the scene where Harry and Ron are in the corridor and Professor McGonagall has to tell them to go to lessons or something. Mm. The Harry and Ron banter is actually pretty well done and quite natural in this film. They genuinely do seem like two 17-year-old boys who are friends. Like, it comes across really well, which makes the worst cases of the interactions between some of the kids really stick out.
I think it's Emma Watson that can't fake laugh.
Oh, fake banter, yeah.
Yeah.
She just doesn't seem like... Well, unfortunately, no. She does have some good banter and good chemistry moments with Harry. And then the film just really pushes into that.
Yeah.
The bit in Slughorn's First Lesson where the potion bows up in Seamus's face. I know I shouldn't like it, but I do. And it's cute. If you take it out of the context of it being Seamus, it's a really cute throwback to film one.
Yeah. Oh, I had another note. Sorry, that's before that. We're such good podcasters.
Such good podcasting.
That when they go to... What's the evil road called again?
Nocturne Alley.
To like be like, oh, this is the evil bad place. They have like a mentally unwell man that's like stood up against the wall, just like facing the wall, just giggling into it. And I'm like, let's maybe not use like mental illness as like some kind of moral indicator. Like, oh, this must be the bad place because
there's a man
facing
muttering
a wall.
At a wall.
Like, let's not. Do that.
I enjoy how also in the Nocturne Alley scene they give them like they're suddenly the trio are Spider-Men and can climb up a fucking roof.
Right?
We've never seen these three do much like physical activity before and suddenly they're roof climbers.
Well,
they're like the Scooby-Doo gang.
Harry, when he was in primary school, did end up on that roof somehow.
Did. There we go. That's where they got it from.
Dumbledore like awkwardly asking Harry about Hermione.
Oh, that's so forced, that bit.
Yeah.
It's... And the thing is, again, this is a reoccurring thing in this. They put it in unnecessarily to try to quell the amount of Harry and Hermione shipping that had happened. But that shipping had happened because the film itself keeps trying to ram Harry and Hermione down our throats. And, like, this film is by far the worst for it. Like, there's so many instances where those two are having a conversation, they have really good chemistry, or they add in all this extra stuff, or it's like... The stuff where Harry's comforting Hermione about Ron, there's so much additional stuff added in that's like seems really romantic. So yeah, then they had to add in this bit where Dumbledore's like, oh, Miss Granger's lovely. And Harry's like, no, I don't like her. It's like, but you seem like you do. You seem like you do.
It's just really unnecessary. There's another bit where Harry is explaining why he's like sucking up to Slughorn. and saying that Dumbledore asked him to, and he's like, it's got to be important. If it wasn't, Dumbledore wouldn't ask. Do we think this is true, or do we think that Dumbledore absolutely would give Harry busy work to try and keep him out of trouble? He's like,
oh, that's a good point. Harry is a troublemaker.
I've got this colouring book, and to defeat Voldemort, we need you to fill in this entire colouring book. Don't go hunting down any prisoners,
Dracos, any blonde-haired boys you fancy,
any big spiders, just colouring book. And Harry's like, it must be important. He wouldn't ask. I've got this really important, you know, challenge. I've got three whole crayons.
I like that as a theory.
Yes.
Yes, I really like that. On the note of, we'll get to the biggest one in adaption, of them adding in super unnecessary stuff while cutting half the book out. But they also add in tiny things in relation to Slughorn, which confuse me. So number one is the hourglass. They add in this hourglass where the sand moves fast if the conversation is stimulating, but slow or stops if it isn't. And they add in this whole thing about Lily giving Slughorn a petal that turns into a fish. Neither of these things add to the plot of the film at all. They're both just like weird MacGuffins that Slughorn has, and I genuinely, I've been trying to wrap my head around why they'd be added in. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, it's just trying to establish that he knew and had a relationship with Lily, but that it feels like there's a lot more efficient ways that they could have done that.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, it's that thing, does that really need over-explaining? We already know that he, like, collects...
Yeah, the fishbowl one I can almost get. The hourglass one added nothing to me. I don't get what that was adding.
No.
And again, when you've got, like, these films had really limited time, really had to pick and choose what from the books they were going to include. And then who was sitting in the writing room going, oh, but have we thought about an hourglass where the sand moves faster when there's stimulating conversation?
It just feels like someone had an idea that they really liked. We're like, oh, this feels so Harry Potter and creative, and they really wanted that hourglass in there.
No, do you know what the hourglass feels like?
What?
Merch.
Yeah.
Merch opportunity.
Yeah.
I really enjoy the random lack of glass in the staircase where the Hermione setting the birds on Ron scene takes place, which I can only assume is just so that wind can be in Hermione's hair as she sets the birds off. Like, just for some reason in this corridor in a Scottish castle, there's no glass in the window. This film does have incredible one-liners, though. One of them being, she only fancies you because she thinks you're the chosen one. But I am the chosen one. It's one of my favourite lines. He's not wrong. It's one of my favourite lines in all the films. I love it. Do you want to talk about the mince pie bit?
No.
Open up, you. Why? It makes me want to rip my skin off in tiny strips and set it on fire.
There's no way that could be acted, that it wouldn't be horrendous.
Well, yeah, this is what I mean about the script being bad. Like, they never should have given... And also,
like, no one flirting is ever like, open up, you.
Is that how 17-year-olds flirt? Like,
you mean you weren't just force-feeding Neil things?
No.
Well, clearly you missed a trick.
Clearly. I just cannot wrap my head around... Oh, it's so bad. And then it's followed, not 5 minutes later, by shoelaces. Why is her flirting acts of servitude, feeding him and tying his shoes?
It's so bad. It's just... I just feel so forced.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly would rather them had just written out the entire Harry Ginny plot point. Because it goes nowhere in the films.
No.
They didn't actually need it in there.
No.
They could have maybe put, you know, more of the entire point of this book, which was Harry being prepared for, you know, book 7.
Well, they put it in and then didn't even end up including the bit where Harry has to make the decision to break up with her to protect her.
Yeah.
So that's left hanging for film 7 as well.
Yeah. It's just...
Something I do enjoy that they added into the Burrow, the one bit of credit I will give them for all the stupid Christmas stuff they did, I really like the scene where Harry has a chat with Arthur in Arthur's shed. Because that chat does take place in the books. They use some lines from the books, but they move it from, like, somewhere random in the house to his shed. And I think that's really nice because it adds, like, another set that we haven't seen. It adds a level of intimacy between them in a kind of father-son way that is really nice to see.
Yeah.
Molly and Arthur really don't get many lines in this film, so I really liked that moment that they added in. You watched this morning.
Yes.
The bit where Ron gets poisoned
mm-hmm.
and Harry gives him a Beezor. Are Beezors mentioned in class? Is that scene included? And did I accidentally like sleep through it or not concentrate?
No, it's not in there.
I thought it wasn't, because what is in there is a tiny line when Harry is queuing to go into Slughorn's lesson to ask him about Voldemort, and Slughorn is letting out a group of like year sevens and year eights. There's a line which Harry hears that says something about, oh, antidotes and Beezors. So that's what they replaced it with. But that is not a good enough setup to make Harry not seem like some sort of fucking genius. But also, the audience doesn't know what a Beezor is. This is the problem where we're such book experts that I can't tell how to watch it without that background information. But that line, if that's all it is not enough to explain to non-book readers that why Harry would know what it is, why he'd know where it is, anything.
This is why I find it so wild when people are huge Harry Potter fans and haven't read the books. I went to university. I lived with a girl who was like, used to say she was a massive Harry Potter fan, used to try and be like, oh, I'm a bigger fan than you. Hadn't read the books.
Mad.
And I don't get how you enjoy the films without that knowledge.
Yeah, because I find it so hard to know what bits of plot I'm only understanding because your brain just fills it all in. So I'm like, oh no, I definitely saw a scene where like they filmed the words on the page that said, just stick a Beezor in him. I don't think they did. I don't think that's there. I think I'm just making it up.
Did you know that... line is, he's been poisoned, you daft dimbo. Not bimbo. Because I fucking didn't until I watched it.
What,
in the
hospital scene? Yeah. No, I thought it was bimbo.
No,
she's blonde.
Dimbo.
Dimbo?
I had it with subtitles on. And then I went back to be like, huh? And she said dimbo.
Dimbo.
Which is so weird to me because...
I've never heard that word.
Heard it. I definitely would say... I did Google it to check that it is, and it is like a real like thing.
Right.
That essentially does mean bimbo. But definitely bimbo is the commoner term, which makes me be like, did they consider bimbo too like rude, too gendered? Like maybe they're like, oh, we're going to get called sexist if she says... But I don't know, because it just feels like, why would you say dimbo?
Dimbo.
Like, I was so confused by this.
Yeah, I had no idea. I always thought it was Darth Bimbo.
Nope, Dimbo.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
I do love in that scene that the teachers are all just standing around watching this Lavender Hermione fight. Like, and all of them, if you look, have a different expression of, like, either fascination, boredom, or content.
It's because they're like, him? You're fighting over
him? That's... Do we know that's Ron Weasley? Like, and they're all just there, like, blinking, like... Okay, skipping ahead, unless you've got something before, to the bit where Harry's got the memory from Slughorn.
Well, my note was that Harry on Felix's 10 out of 10, cinema peaked.
Oh, I put that in casting.
Daniel Radcliffe finally worked out how to act.
Yeah, I put that in casting.
It is the only good thing about the film.
It's absolute... It's delivery. Well, by all means, sir. Come along. The delivery.
So good.
I don't know. I was watching that scene this morning, and Neil was next to me in bed and went, did they give Daniel Radcliffe coke before he did that scene?
Potentially.
So yeah, Harry's got the memory. Him and Dumbledore have watched it. And then we get one of the stupidest lines of the film that I cannot believe whoever was checking the script let in. Which is Dumbledore comes out the memory and goes, this is beyond anything I ever imagined. No, it isn't. No, it isn't beyond anything you've ever... Because he then goes, oh, I spun it on anything I ever imagined. But here's the ring and the book that I've already destroyed. And I think I've found another one. Well, it's not beyond anything you ever imagined then. Who let this line in? It really pisses me off.
It makes no sense.
The whole point, even in the books, it's a bit like, okay, so you guessed there were seven. Okay, so your guess was confirmed. It's a bit annoying, but fine. This is like... And also, the other thing I notice is, this film never says there's seven Horcruxes. It never, ever, ever says it. And this film has no excuses for anything it does wrong like this, because every book was out and they were in pre-planning for film 7 and 8 at this stage.
I just, it's so badly, like, the only reason this book exists is it's setting up the next book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, its entire reason for existing is explaining all of this, Voldemort's backstory, the Horcruxes, how they're going to know what they are.
Yep.
And yet, they don't include any of that. This film, you could watch it and not watch this film. You could watch all of them and skip this film. You wouldn't lose a thing.
No.
It would make just as much sense.
Yep.
This film has no reason to exist.
No. So then, yeah, the entire point is to set up the Horcrux hunt. But it's like, we have... If you didn't... You wouldn't know how many Horcruxes they're hunting. And also, Dumbledore says the line, well, they could be anything.
Mm.
The whole point is that they're not anything. They're treasures and trophies. But because they didn't include the other scenes, he has to say, oh, they could be anything. So how the fuck is Harry meant to know what he's searching for in the next film?
And when to stop searching.
And when to stop...
And it's so dumb because they have chosen to focus on the romance over the, like, fantasy plot. Even though, I'm sorry, you have Bonnie Wright, that is the worst actor ever, that has no charisma with Daniel Radcliffe. And then you have Ron and Hermione, who I'm sure potentially could have had charisma.
If
but
you would
spend
give the past... Ron a single line.
Yeah, you spent the past like 5 films just character assassinating him to the point no one wants him with Hermione based off the films. So no one's going to be rooting for that, really. So you've got two couples that absolutely, like, no one is invested in. And you're focusing on this over the plot, which is why people love the books. I'm not saying you can't have the romance in there, but don't make it the central point of the film. There's so many romances out there that are actually people with charisma and a good script and chemistry, and we don't need another fucking rom-com. We want Harry Potter. We want the plot.
The thing is, I'm pretty sure this is the first... No, this is... The other thing that's shocking about this is the first one where J.K. Rowling sat in. She's credited as, I believe, an exec producer, or she at least sat in on the script reading, because how Dumbledore came out as gay was during that bit where he appears at the station. The script originally had something in that said, Dumbledore said, oh, I had many evening with a lovely girl. And J.K. Rowling said, you have to cut that out. Dumbledore's gay. So that means she did at least a pass of the script, which, like... Is this not your job? Well, to be fair, it's not. The script editors should be doing this. But Jesus Christ, like...
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So, okay, then we get something which... they've added in because they're lazy. I don't hate it as a visual medium. So what they add in, instead of telling us how many Horcruxes there are, what they might be, anything like that, they add in something where the Horcruxes... can kind of talk to each other, so therefore Harry gets weird.
So it's when you hold a microphone too close to a speaker.
Yeah, which as a visual medium I don't despise, actually, but as an extremely lazy way of not explaining how many Horcruxes there are, where they are, why Voldemort chose to make them, the significance of the objects he chose, rather than just using Harry as a fucking metal detector. This is what I said. This reminds me of ACOTAR, like calls to like.
Yeah.
That's what this is like.
Yeah.
I quite like the visual bit where Harry touches the ring and gets a load of flashbacks. That was kind of cool. So then in film 7, he just kind of knows where the Horcruxes are by that, and he's getting flashbacks. And the one good thing about them doing this is the absolutely amazing line where Dumbledore goes, but magic, and Harry touches the ring and gets a load of flashbacks. And then there's a pause and Dumbledore looks, his face changes and goes, leaves traces. And I think that was the film trying to say, this is the moment where Dumbledore realises Harry is a Horcrux. Mm. The moment Harry touches the ring and it spins, and Harry gets a flashback, and Dumbledore is then looking at Harry with a really weird expression and walks around the desk and goes, leaves traces. I was like, ooh, that's quite good.
Yeah.
But it pisses me off that they had to do that because of their own fucking laziness.
Yes. Yeah. They chose to add in so many moments that weren't needed and weren't in there originally and focus 90% on the romance. Like, I'm not saying the romance shouldn't be in there, but it should be... equal to what it was in the books, if not less, honestly, when you have, you know,
yeah, limited time
with no charisma.
Yeah.
But yeah, they could have actually explained it and they didn't, and it's infuriating.
It's honestly... Whew. Casting!
Woo!
Jim Broadbent is wonderful, but too nice and yes, bumbling for Slughorn.
This was my note. He's too sympathetic.
Yeah, way too sympathetic. Like, he doesn't have the Slytherin streak I need.
Yeah, he... In the books, he's such a perfect grey, and he's just too likeable in this. The same way that Alan Rickman's too likeable.
I think it's slightly... It's a different kind of likeable, though, because I felt like... This felt like Slughorn was doing things accidentally. Like, he yes, was just kind of like a bumbling posh boy who didn't know he was being a bit rude, rather than having that streak of, like, self-preservation arrogance.
Yeah, being selective and elitist.
Yeah. And that isn't... I think that's the script's fault, because Jim Broadbent is absolutely fantastic in every role he's ever played. So I don't know if it's the script or him playing it wrong.
Yeah, I think it's the script, because I think they were trying to do the rom-com thing.
Yeah.
They would have rather have had him as, like, a comedy figure opposed to being true to the character.
Yeah.
So I think he acts it wonderfully. I think he's brilliant. I think it's just the scripting issue that he just comes across as way too, like, sympathetic.
Yeah. We've already talked about how awful Bonnie Wright is. Sorry, Bonnie Wright.
Salt.
Has the actress playing Narcissa been in the films before, just in the background, or is this the first time she's in it?
I don't know.
Yeah, I need to look that up. She's absolutely brilliant. But what made me really sad is I realised the bit where her and Snape do the unbreakable vow, they're both dead. So young. Like, so young.
Yeah.
But she's absolutely brilliant, and oh my god, this falls more into cinematography, hair and makeup, but the hair. Rather than just doing full white blonde like the rest of the Malfoys, to do the black so it matches Bellatrix with the white, oh, genius, oh, good lord, Cruella de Vil,
so
hello.
Iconic.
Just whoever came up with that, hats off, like, Jesus Christ. Bellatrix in this film is going for that paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
Like... She's acting her ass off compared to everyone else. And everyone else is trying hard.
Yeah.
She just delivers everything with 10 times the pizzazz of anyone else.
Yeah. Jessie Cave, have you watched her audition?
Yes, I have.
It's... How do you do that? How do you go into the room as, like, a, you know, nobody? And at this point, obviously, Rupert Grint is massively famous already. And they literally, you haven't watched it, pause the episode now, go watch it. They made her, like, crawl all over him, being all, like, desperate and flirty and stuff in, like, a really cringe way. And I'm like, how do you have the confidence? Yep. Like, that's the most brutal interview, audition ever. Like, wow.
Yep.
Wow.
She's phenomenal in this.
Yeah.
It's kind of a shame we only really get one film of her and they didn't cast someone to play Lavender, and it's kind of the problem they have with a lot of the background actors. They didn't, apart from Seamus and Dean, they didn't long cast anyone, which is really a shame, because I don't think Dean had a single line in this film, but I kept spotting in the background because he's now shot up to about 7'2", so he just sticks out in every scene, and I'm keep being like, god, why didn't you use him, because his acting skills nowadays are phenomenal.
You know, it's kind of weird that they didn't cast, like, the female Gryffindors, but they did the male ones.
Isn't that bizarre?
Wonder why that was. I'm sorry, but Katie to me will only ever be the Basil Brush girl. And I remember...
It takes me out of the film every time. I'm like, it's Molly from Basil Brush.
I was annoyed when it came out. She was in it, because I was like, this just completely breaks it for me.
Yeah,
like,
it's Molly from Basil Brush. She will always be Molly from Basil Brush.
Yeah, Soz girl, you're typecast.
Americans aren't going to know what we're talking about. Just Google Basil Brush. But presumably the modern era... Because Basil Brush has been on telly forever, so it's just our era of Basil Brush.
Yeah,
Molly. Know. They hired... To play young Voldemort. Not young Voldemort. Young Voldemort. The child one. We'll get to the other one. There's teenage Voldemort. There's a new one. And there's kid Voldemort.
Yeah.
Okay. Kid Voldemort is Ralph Fiennes' nephew. He's one of the Fiennes dynasty. And they hired him because he looks like Ralph Fiennes. And that's the only good thing I can say about him. Yeah. Because he just delivers everything in a sort of monotone. And I know he's 10, but the only way that delivering everything in a monotone works is he comes across as really creepy, which kind of works from Voldemort. But it doesn't, because he's meant to be slightly charismatic as a child. But instead he just comes across as someone you'd lock in a room and never let out. It's horrible. I'd be like, no way that child is coming to my school. What the fuck is wrong with it?
You lock him in one of my creepy built-in cupboards.
I would. He's just like, I can make animals say things.
My flat has these really creepy built-in cupboards that have never been finished, so the inside is just concrete, like solid concrete, and just like kind of dirty and stained, and it really does give the vibe of a child has been locked in here at some point. Like, it's like every horror film when there's like a dank, dirty basement. This is the vibe of the cupboards.
I would lock Ralph Fiennes' nephew in that cupboard.
Yes, I think we should hunt him down.
Yeah.
I know he'll be a full-on adult now, but boy, you're going in the cupboard.
You're going in the cupboard. But yeah, they only hired him because he's part of the Fiennes dynasty.
I think that might be the episode title. Boy, you're going in the cupboard.
And it relates back to Harry in the cupboard.
Wow, we've come full circle. Voldemort's in the cupboard now, bitches.
Teenage Voldemort. Also hate him. Awful.
Yeah. Look, they peaked with Voldemort in the second
they
film.
They really did.
Chef's kiss. Love him.
Yeah. This one is just not... Again, you've made him too creepy. Read the books. He is meant to be, like, extremely handsome. He doesn't look handsome. He looks like a dweeb. He's meant to be, like, charming. He's going to reel you in. Whereas he just comes across as, like, I'm going to say evil things now.
Yes. Tell me, evil McEvil, this evil knowledge.
Where is it?
It'll
be
fine.
You could have never known he'd turn out evil. I'm like, I could have sensed it a mile off with that kid. Jesus Christ.
Literally. Isn't it, wasn't that guy in Doctor Who as well also being really creepy?
Oh, I don't remember. Who in Doctor Who?
In an episode with aliens. Or they weren't.
Yeah.
I was like,
Doctor Who. The best line you've ever said. Which episode of Doctor Who? I don't know. It was one with aliens, mate.
No, I'm sorry. I just laughed so hard. I think some blood might have come out.
Of where? Of where?
My vagina. Yeah. I don't know. I think it might be an air.
You queefed is what you've just told me.
I laugh so hard I queefed.
That's the episode title.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
To talk about some of the existing actors, Alan Rickman gets better and better every film. He didn't have many lines, but the bit in the Christmas party where someone says something to him and he just turns around and walks off was so good, I cry laughed.
He also, his acting when he is voodoo kadoodling Dumbledore is just chef's kiss. So good. It also really made me laugh. I don't know how this is the first time I've put it together, but the fact that he, like, topples Dumbledore off the top of a tower, and I'm like, it's like Alan Rickman in Die Hard.
I thought this with the slow-mo falling. I'm like, yeah, that's almost shot for shot. Has anyone like put them side by side?
I bet they have.
I'm sure they have. We've talked about Darren Rad's absolutely brilliant spider acting, but can we talk about the bit where Lavender's drawing the heart on the train and he's just fiddling with the seat cushion? Because I don't know whether it was scripted or he just started doing it. It's so good. It's so awkward. He's just it's just brilliant. Like, you can tell he's really, I think with the kids, you can tell when they've really, in between films, put effort into learning new skills. Like, they said they went to acting classes in between films, and like, I think you can really tell he's trying, which is great. Rupert is absolutely excellent in the love potion scene. Really good. Just funny. I think these films make, maybe it's just that there aren't too many light-hearted moments in a lot of these films, so when you have these breakaway moments where they're acting more funny, you're like, oh god, they're good, aren't they?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, and I mean, Harry Potter is funny and it should be funny.
Yeah,
it's just for me that they go way too hard in like the rom-com direction, and it's like, you can have like comedy but also like the darkness and the fantasy. Yeah, like, you can very much do that.
Yeah, definitely.
That's what you should be doing. You can't be like, oh no, we can't have serious plot and also jokes.
You can do both.
Yeah.
Speaking of seriousness, though, the star of the actors, of everyone, is hats off to Tom Felton in the tower scene. Like, Jesus Christ, you out-acted everyone. Like, fucking hell.
Yeah.
And for not being in it much the last few films and then having this big, important... And he was in this film a lot more. He had, like, breakaway scenes which weren't from Harry's point of view. And, oh my God, I think about it quite often, how good his acting is in that scene. It's fantastic.
He's very good. Shame he's a transphobe.
It is a shame.
We now have some delicious chocolatey thing.
Mud. So this is from...
Helena?
Helena? Dear Hannah and Charlie, I've already given you my alcohol request for my episode, but I couldn't pass up the opportunity to send you a little something via Nikita. Feel free to try it either on or off air. Up to you. Thank you for continuing to bless my ears.
Aww.
All the best, Helena.
I'm so excited.
So this is
the packaging.
Look at a little bottle.
It looks so good.
Look at it. Mozart chocolate liqueur. Oh. All natural ingredients.
I'm going to enjoy this. Yes. Gorgeous glasses.
Mm, thank you.
But it's fucking good.
It's just like delicious.
A thick chocolate milkshake that's vaguely alcoholic. I wish it was socially acceptable to be an adult and drink chocolate milk.
Again, you worry far too much about things that are socially acceptable to be an adult. Just do it. If you want to do it, just do it.
But the gremlins in my wall will see and judge me.
You don't have gremlins. That's Todd. Todd is a gremlin, but will not see or judge you. Cinematography. The focus on Dumbledore and his hand in the opening flashback is brilliant. So basically, the film starts off with a flashback to film 5, and the camera pans in on Dumbledore putting his arm around Harry's shoulder, but it's the arm that ends up blackened and burned. Brilliant. Well done.
Yeah, it's something that these films, it's not the first time that it's been done. They also do it a lot in film 3 that I really enjoy, is this like depiction of like the hot summer as like a depressing thing, which I feel like is quite uncommon, but they really do this kind of like, oh, the grass is dead.
Yeah.
It's all like brown and orange. And it's like too hot, relentless, like muggy, depressing. It's quite unusual because normally, obviously, the summer's shown as, oh, it's so bright.
Yeah, and you're right.
Sunny and gorgeous. And it's quite interesting that they kind of twist it like this, especially to show how Harry views his summers as like this like relentless, like horrible, depressing time, which is so different than what we usually view them as.
Yeah, you're right. I like that too. Yeah, because there's even like the steam on the windows in the cafe and
Yeah, there's some like great wide shots of just like all the like just orange dead grass.
I've got to say, overall, I'm not going to attach this to a specific thing. The way they lay out shots in this film is absolutely phenomenal. The framing of every shot looks like a piece of art. They spent so much time on it, which they didn't need to spend on what is a YA film series. Like, there's this shot where An aura is pacing up and down in front of the door to the Great Hall while you dump, and it's a wide shot of Dumbledore doing his speech. So the aura is almost in black as he walks back and forth because the lightness of the Great Hall within, it's like, ah, the safety of Hogwarts is only contained within this room. The danger is right out. Oh, God. Mm. And like, they constantly have the outside framed with all these archways within Hogwarts, and everything looks like a painting in this film. And they're the good things, I'll say. The framing is gorgeous.
Yeah.
The fuck is with the colour grading in this film? This one came out, I think, like, around the time Twilight did. And I feel like it got badly influenced by Twilight and colour grading. Because this film is really, like, grey in not a good way. And it's so dark. And, like, for a film that's part rom-com, there are some scenes that are so dark, I can't see what's bloody happening.
Oh, this is my pet peeve. Like, just... Games do it a lot as well. Like, Skyrim is awful for it. You basically can't play Skyrim if you're, like, remotely in a bright place. You have to, like, max screen brightness and dark environment as possible. All bits of it are genuinely unplayable.
Yeah.
And I've repeatedly asked Todd to fix it, and he just meows at me.
Rude.
I know.
So rude. But yeah, I get that this film was going for a, like, oh, everything is so much darker. But if you are filming things, there was stuff going on in the background or foreground that I genuinely couldn't see what was happening in this film, then you fucked up. Like, it's stupid.
Yeah.
The decision to put Draco in full suits in this film was a strange one.
Yeah.
I don't get the full suit wizarding thing.
Yeah.
I especially don't get it with Draco. He just looks like he's auditioning for The Young Apprentice.
Yeah, or he's like going to his prom or like someone's wedding and he's in like, yeah.
Weird, very weird. We've got a third new pensieve entrance, thank you. We love to change up how the pensieve works every film. Cheers. Thanks. Consistency, I love it. Again, we haven't worked out how to have glass in Harry's glasses in every scene. There was one where it was so obvious there was no glass in the glasses. I was like, come on, is it that hard? Really? Like, characters wear glasses all the time. Is it really that hard? What did you think of Luna's Christmas dress?
Can't remember.
Oh, I really liked it. Silver tiered.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was quite a good representation of how it was described. Well, it was described as dress robes in the books, and they fuck dress robes in this film, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Rumour requirement as the Room of Lost Things, absolutely brilliant, because you could pause it at any point and spot props that have been used in previous films.
Yeah, really good.
So good from them. Like, oh, I spotted a chess piece in this one, and I was like, oh, I love it, yes. Because it's so easy for them, because they genuinely...
And cost efficient.
Yeah, because they genuinely did have storage rooms of old props. And they're just like, I'll just fucking shove it in. Like, oh, so good from them, and makes so much sense. Like, yeah, where would the chess pieces end up?
Yeah.
In the Room of Lost Things. I love it. There were bits of score I really liked in this film. I really liked the score as they went into the cave. And I really liked the score... When the fun potions music did it like when they're making the potions.
I love the bit with the fucking fire.
It's so, so good. Cool. I also put cave too dark, fire good.
Yeah,
it looks so sick.
Yeah, my like weird question though is why the fuck are there like massive gemstones sticking out of the island?
I don't know. Why isn't it just rocks? Why are they clear?
Yeah. Weird.
Yeah, that was the only scene that I didn't mind actually being too dark and almost black and white, but it would have been a lot more effective if the rest of the film was brighter, because then you would have been like, whoa, this scene is so dark. But
yeah,
the rest of the film's bloody dark, so I can't see what's going on.
Yeah,
the bit where Dumbledore's dead and they all raise their wands, brilliant addition, absolutely love it. 10 out of 10, no notes. Like, it works really well on screen. It gets rid of the dark mark. I don't know why, I just really like it. And something I noticed in this film, which I'd never spotted before, but nearly made me tear up, which makes me glad when I rewatch things and I'm looking for stuff, is when Harry's in Dumbledore's office and he is like looking over Dumbledore's desk, and then McGonagall walks in. Just before McGonagall walks in, it's panning over the desk and there's a bowl of sherbet lemons.
Oh.
And I was like...
Oh. Big sad.
Big sad. Would have been sadder if they'd ever mentioned sherbet lemons in the film, but... That was actually all my cinematography notes.
Yeah. I feel like I've already ranted about most of my adaption notes. It's almost like our categories don't work.
I don't know what you're talking about. I like that we do get an intro through the Muggle world, but it's not the Prime Minister opener, so it's not good enough. But
they tried. They went into a Muggle office, I guess.
Yeah, they really, they're like, let's do this big showy dramatic thing because, you know, that's what fucking Hollywood and cinema's like. But I just feel like it would have been a lot more impactful to do it the way in the book just because it's something so different. Yeah. Like, we've had a lot of, like, big blasty scenes throughout Harry Potter. I think actually kind of taking it into, like, a really bleak, normal, muggly kind of thing. And I think if you got, like, a couple of really good actors behind it, I think that would have been really good.
I agree.
Why can the Death Eaters fly again? I already mentioned it in the last film, but I hate it.
Why are they balls of smoke? Stupid.
Hate them.
There's this bit that they kept in from the book where Harry claims that he doesn't know that there's been a smear campaign against Dumbledore. This didn't need to be in there because it's not mentioned in the rest of the films. Like, it's not mentioned that he's been throwing out the Wizigamot and things like that. But they left the line in. But the film showed at the beginning Harry reading the paper front to back, whereas in the books it just shows him, like, reading the top of the paper and throwing it away. Don't keep lines in that directly contradict things you filmed. It's stupid.
Yeah.
So something they add in this film, which I do really like, and it's one of the first films to really do it, is scenes away from Harry's perspective. I feel like the films have always mostly stuck with Harry's point of view, whereas this scene, we get Spinner's End pushed further back, but we get it, and it's done really well. And we get Draco in the cabinet. So the audience knows about the cabinet before Harry. And I think it works really, really well. I'm really glad it was in there. And it gives more time for Tom Felton to do his acting. And I just thought it was great.
Don't know why that phrasing has amused me.
Yeah, it gives him more time to open cabinets and close cabinets.
Yeah.
We don't really have the time for that in other films because they have to, like, cut so much and fit so much in. But I'm really... It's an advantage of a film seeing things that aren't just from Harry's point of view.
Yeah.
We've got some... You mentioned that they don't hire... They didn't hire, like, Lavan Parvati for all 8 films like they did for the boys. But we do have some extra random Gryffindor girls in a lot of scenes that have never been there before and are clearly not in Harry's year. Just stuck in the wrong scenes. Just stick anyone in a Gryffindor tie and it's fine.
Yep.
There's the great scene. This is great continuity where it's nighttime. It's bedtime. And Harry and Ron are lying in bed bitching about Dean.
Where's Dean?
In a room that they share with Dean.
Dean's just crying.
Literally, this is all I can imagine. The camera turn around and Dean's curled up in his bed like...
There's also Ron just being really weird, being like, Dean's brilliant. It's like, calm down.
Well, he's like, get slimy hands off him. Dean's great. I'm like, are you all right? I mean, Dean is great, but... They kept in the bit where Hermione kind of asked Ron to the Slug Club dinner party, but fucking ruined it again because of the character assassination of Ron.
Yeah.
Hermione goes, I was going to invite you. And unlike in the books where Ron is kind of flattered and flustered, they make him go, really? And then in the next scene, Hermione's like, I was under the impression we were going together. It's like, how would you be under that impression when his answer was, really?
It's, there's no fucking plot consistency with this. Like, they really do just add things in and then completely contradict it. Like, it's fine.
Yep.
Bizarre.
Yep. Neville is constantly a replacement for a house elf. No house elves in this film. Just Neville being a servant at the party. Of course. Why not? And then we get my least favourite part of this film. The Burrow. What?
Ginny just stands there. Like, it annoys me. There's a bit when she comes face to face with the Death Eater and she just... And then Harry runs up and is like...
Ginny's meant to be a badass. Like, the books are like, Ginny would fucking kill a bitch. Like, go, Ginny!
She literally just... And then the thing that annoys me the most is that then when Harry jumps to defend her, he does fucking stupefy. It's not even like he does some super advanced defense that's against the dark arts that she wouldn't know. He just... She knows stupefy. Why is he the one, like, protecting her?
Because she's in her dressing gown and she's scared.
That's not Ginny!
But also, why is the scene in here? Okay, so what the film did is went, oh, I'm going to cut out all the fantasy plot. I'm going to make it a rom-com. And then I can only imagine they got to the end and went, oh, it's a fucking bit rom-commy, isn't it?
Yeah.
What can we add? What if we just burnt down the Weasleys in the middle of it. What if we just raise the stakes by burning down the Weasleys? Oh, but you need it for the next film. They'll forget about it by the next film. They'll forget about it. We can host a wedding there. It's fine. It's fine. Stop worrying about it.
It's just...
Burn it down.
It goes on for so long as well. It's such a long scene that has no fucking consequences.
Nope.
The Death Eaters just decide to leave. They've literally, like...
We don't know what they wanted.
They've got them surrounded. They're literally all cornered on, like, a little thing, surrounded by Death Eaters, and then the Death Eaters are like, oh, fuck, dinner's ready. I can hear the oven timer. And just fuck off. It has no consequences on the plot.
Nope.
Like...
It directly contradicts the next film.
It doesn't even really raise the stakes. I feel like the stakes are already pretty high. Or you could, you know, include some of the actual fucking plot.
Well, that's the thing. I feel like they included it because they're like, this film's getting boring. The film's getting boring because you cut out all the interesting plot. You've created your own issue.
And it's like such a long scene that's them just like running about between like, seemingly the burrows in the middle of a marsh. I'm really confused about how they get to their home. Like, just...
Sisters in a swamp. It's Shrek's house.
Just running about the swamp. Going, get out of my swamp!
Get out of my swamp!
It just goes on and on and on. It's a zoo, zoo. Yeah, it just goes on and on and on and on and on and adds nothing. Like, they probably could have got, like, half an hour of extra plot into that one fucking scene of them just running about going, zoo, zoo, zoo.
Oh, wait, we've got Harry Potter cornered. Should we bring him to the Dark Lord?
Nah.
Nah.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, the entire burrow is burnt down. Should we build it so it looks exactly the same, including all the imperfections, in time for the next film?
Also, like, there were protective spells. What happened to them? Why did, if there were no protective spells or if they could be easily broken, why does this attack only happen now? Why did they wait?
I hate it!
It's so dumb.
It's so dumb. How did this ever get signed off? Bathroom scene. The bathroom fight is interesting change. It's something I hadn't clocked before. I believe in the books, right, Harry stumbles across Draco accidentally, or does he discover him on the Marauder's map?
I think the map.
Okay, fine. But he still sort of somewhat innocently discovers him.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there, and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
And then is trying to not draw attention to him. He attacks when Draco attacks. In the film, he sees Draco staring at Basil Brush Girl. And then chases Draco into a toilet. Like, Draco is like, I've got to get out this hall. And Harry starts running after him. And Draco notices and runs to a toilet. And Harry's pursuing him and then says, I know what you did. So it's a lot more like Harry provoked Draco into this attack.
Harry was asking for it.
Yeah, he was. He was. But yeah, it just seems a lot... I don't know. They changed it with Harry chasing Draco down.
Yeah.
I don't think it works as well. Also, you know in the book, Snape's like, go and empty your bag. And it's kind of like, oh, he doesn't actually know he's got the Half-Blood Prince book. Harry's holding, the only thing Harry is holding in that scene is the wand and the Half-Blood Prince book when Snape walks in. It's like, okay, you were literally caught red-handed. And that leads me on to my third most hated change. I'll get to my second most hated change. The kiss scene in the Room of Requirement.
A, worst film kiss I've ever watched in my life. I want to
makes
rip my own eyeballs out.
Peel my skin off with a really blunt vegetable peeler.
Yep, exactly.
In the books, it's like this joyful moment where they run the Quidditch and everyone's celebrating. Woo. In this, Ginny has just found out Harry tried to murder another student and is helping him hide the evidence while they're both sad about it and then kisses him. Number two, Harry... Okay, no, there's 3 points here. Number 2 point is that Harry is kind of meant to want to keep the book. They cut that out. Like, that's meant to be, like, a bit of an evil point that Harry, like, kind of wants to keep the book. It's just like, oh, we got to get rid of it. Number three, at this stage, they knew that they were going to film, you know, film 7 in a year. They had the book and that Harry would have to find the diadem in the Room of Requirement and that they knew that in book 6, he touches the diadem to hide the book and that's how he thinks to look for it. And they go, nah, let's have Ginny hide the book. Let's not include that. Let's not include the thing that will be needed to... And can you imagine how cool the flashback scene would have been when Harry's like running through the Rune of Requirement and then he's like, shit, I touched a diadem. What? Like, you could have even added... They've made... So they created this sound effect when Harry touches a Horcrux. That's now been created. You could have added that in the background and as he's hiding the book. It's just the lack of foresight for something that is so easily... You could have had... something so cool. You could have had such a cool flashback and you've fucked it so badly.
Yeah, I mean, that entire scene's so uncomfortable because it's like it's kind of done in a way where it's kind of trying to make it out like some weird kind of sex game. Do you know
she's
what
like,
I mean,
you could hide me up here.
Like, it kind of implied that they didn't go at it between the stacks and her like hiding it is some like naughty little hide and seek. Like, he's gonna follow the trail of her clothes to where she's hidden the book and her virginity. Like, it's just really uncomfortable.
They add in, to save time, they add in a stupid bit where Dumbledore's like, Harry's like, you can't operate inside Hogwarts, and Dumbledore's like, being me has its advantage. No! Being you doesn't have its advantages. No one can operate in or out of Hogwarts. Fuck Dumbledore.
Has this even been established in the films?
I don't fucking know. Probably not.
I feel like if it has, which I don't feel like it has, I feel like it would have been brief and long enough ago that you could have just not put that line in. You know?
Well, they have established the Zexa security this year, so I don't know. Okay, interesting change. I don't hate it, but it changes the last scene entirely. Harry does not have Petrificus Totalus put on him during the scene where Dumbledore dies. Dumbledore just tells him, hide. Promise me you won't move. And Harry even is approached by Snape, who tells him to be quiet while I go sort it. So this changes the scene massively because in the book, Harry has no choice but to watch what happens. And he thinks, oh my God, I could have intervened, but I couldn't. Like, I should have, but I couldn't.
Should have, would have, could have.
In the films, he's left with a much more real guilt of, I could have intervened.
Yeah.
I really could have. And I chose to trust Dumbledore and trust Snape. And that guilt is so much worse. Like, that's horrific.
Yeah.
But I don't hate it because I actually think, like, it adds this level of sadness. But I don't think it's believable for Harry's character.
Yeah.
I don't think he would have stayed still.
Oh, absolutely. He does not trust Snape that much.
Exactly. And then we get to my second least favourite part after the burrow burning down, but before the skin peeling kiss, which is the last scene where they decide, oh, do you know what? Do you know what? Just don't give Ron any lines. I don't think he needs lines.
And he just sits there sulking in the background.
Oh, God.
Like,
and they give all
Harry
of his lines
and Hermione are having this like big heartfelt... Ron's just like a sulky teenager.
Because Rupert Grint was probably sulking because he got no fucking lines.
I don't understand why he's just not part of the conversation. And then every now and then it just shows him like sat there with a face like a slapped ass.
The films lampooned him to their own fucking detriment.
Brilliant use of lampooned.
Thank you. But like... they get to film 8 and they're like, God, why is no one rooting for this kiss? You ruined it! You character assassinate! And also, he's the best actor out of the three of them. Like, for God's sake, just give a crumb. Throw him a crumb.
It's just so bad. Like, they just make him so detestable.
Yeah. And like, it was so such a moving part to me at the end of book six, and I talked about it, how Ron and Hermione share in their own ways that we're with you, we're going with you. They give all the lines to Hermione, every single one, where Ron's just sitting there like,
it bad.
And then Harry ends with just the stupidest line to ever be written. How didn't I realise how beautiful Hogwarts was? It's the only home. You're an orphan who grew up under the stairs. Are you telling me you have never noticed how beautiful Hogwarts is?
Under the stairs cupboards in Surrey look a lot like giant fucking castles in the Scottish Highlands, okay? Okay? Have you seen Serpentine Station? You know, that really...
How have I never noticed
that sets the fucking standard quite high.
The entire point of every film and book up until now is Harry's like, oh, this is the most beautiful, wonderful, magical place. And then he's like, God, I didn't notice how good it looked. I don't know.
Yeah, not when he was riding around it on a broom, on a hippogriff, on a dragon.
Oh, Harry. So in conclusion, this film is fucking stupid.
It's bad.
This microphone is determined to run away from me.
Yes. Really dumb.
I don't know where I'd rank it in my film rankings.
Me neither, but yeah.
It's the thing is, it's probably the most likely one, though, that I'm going to stick on in the background.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite rewatchable.
I don't know, because I quite like the first three for they're so atmospheric.
They're so cozy, yeah.
So they're good background because I don't need to absorb them. It's much more about like the soundtrack and the like ambient noise of them.
True. Yeah, this film's stupid.
A little bit, yeah.
And they had no excuses. At least with some of the others, all the books weren't out. So you could kind of forgive some of their... They could have just asked J.K. Rowling, but you can kind of forgive it. This one, you've got no excuses left to give.
Absolutely none.
Like, you had all the information available to you.
It's terrible.
And that's it. Thanks.
Yeah. Do you have a question?
Nope.
Bye!
I can ask you a question.
Okay.
Can I ask you a question? Have you ever had someone kiss you in a crowded room?
Probably.
Was every single one of your friends making fun of you?
Not that I can think, no.
Well, 15 seconds later, they were clapping too?
Definitely not.
Then what did you do?
Not that.
Did you leave her house in the middle of the night?
That seems unsafe.
Did you wish you'd put up more of a fight?
I feel like I'm being victim blamed right now.
When she said it was enough?
What's going on?
Did you wish you could still touch her?
Who am I touching? Am I the victim here or the perpetrator?
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Goblet of Wine. To find us on social media, search at Goblet of Wine Pod on Twitter or at Goblet of Wine Podcast on Instagram. We also have a website over at www.gobletofwine.co.uk where you can keep up with everything that we do. This podcast is produced by our wonderful Hufflepuff tier patrons.
Yolanda, Sir Bandersnatch, Samuel, Michael, Kylie, Jasmine, Florian, and Ardent.
If you'd like to support this podcast, check out our Goblet of Wine Patreon, where you can also gain access to bonus episodes, behind-the-scenes content, and our Discord. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and we'll see you in the next one.
Bye!